WDEV FM and AM presents our two-hour public affairs program, Open Mic with Mike Smith. Important topics, topical guests, and your phone calls. And now here's the host of Open Mic, Mike Smith.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us this morning on this cold January morning. Today is the start of the 2016 legislative session, and we'll spend a considerable amount of time on today's program talking about just that. Also, we'll speak to Betsy Bishop, the president of the Vermont Chamber of Commerce, on her organization's expectations of the upcoming legislative session. We'll get to Betsy in a moment, but I wanted to set up the second hour and invite your phone calls and your question and your comments with this question. What do you think should be the priority of this year's legislature? What do you think? Should it be the economy? Is it mandatory sick leave? Which, if you read the newspaper and watch TV or listen to radio, you'll know that that's a priority for some of the Democratic leadership. Is it opiates? What should we do about Senator Norm McAllister? Is that an issue? Is it the budget and the economy, the budget, taxes, those sort of combined issues of fiscal responsibility, fiscal soundness? Is it the passage of the carbon tax? Is it legalizing marijuana? Is it reforming our social welfare system? Or our education finance system, which will result in property tax reform and relief? Is it reforming the healthcare system? Should gun control be an objective of the legislature this year? So what do you think should be a priority of this year's legislature? According to recent polls, and the poll conducted by the Castleton Polling Institute, Vermonters list economic issues as their top concern. More than a third of Vermonters said that the economy, jobs, and the cost of living in Vermont was their top concern. But when you combine that with those who cited taxes and government spending as their top concern, almost half of Vermonters expressed fiscal or economic concerns as the issue that was foremost on their minds. And this shouldn't come as a surprise. By the way, the economy, jobs are always at the top of polls. But with the continued angst with the condition of our economy, it's understandable, given from where we came from, that this still is a number one issue. For example, the Great Recession of 2008 and 2009 had a really huge impact on our psyche. And although that recession is long gone, according to economists, slow growth, rising taxes, and the cost of living in this state and stagnant wages have conspired to make it more difficult for the average Vermonter to get ahead. So is the economy the number one issue? And look, you understand why there's so much angst. First, the Great Recession. Second, there is so much concern about what's going on around the world. China's economy is slowing, as you saw in the stock market yesterday. That's having a huge impact on the stock market here in the United States. The Eurozone is having economic struggles. Russia is on the march. And the Middle East, as always, is in turmoil. And what is interesting, if you look at historic trends since World War II, the average recession happens about every 7 years. So we're due for another recession. And if you look at Vermont in particular, look at employment in Vermont, you look at Chittenden County, which has historically been the engine for Vermont. You know, Vermonters see IBM, the largest employer that was purchased by Global Foundries, and then there's rumors of another possible sale, and they wonder what is going on. And overall job growth, especially job losses in manufacturing and construction industries, have not abated in Vermont. And other than a few counties, job growth has been sluggish and limited in this state. You look at real estate values, and I know that, Dick, you're holding on the line here. You look at real, I know real estate is a big issue with you. You look at real estate values, and they're still down from their pre-recession highs. And the median household income continues to fall, according to the latest U.S. Census data. In addition, if you compare the three-year period from 2011 to 2013 to that of 1988 to 1990, median household income is about the same as it was 20 years ago. And although the unemployment rate is low in this state, and it is low in this state when compared to other states and other regions in the United States, it's not low in all portions of Vermont. For example, the Northeast Kingdom has an unemployment rate that's between 5 and 7%, whereas Chittenden County, when I last checked, was at 2.9%. So the economic future is uncertain. And so I get back to the question, what should be the priority of this year's legislative session? And that's what we'll focus on in the second hour. And also, if you want to talk about Trump and Trump's visit, we'll talk about that as well. And what is going on with Bernie? Bernie has a beef with the Democratic Party. Love to talk about that. But first, let's go to the phone lines. And if you want to join their conversation, call us at our WDEV studios at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to Dick in St. Albans. Dick, you're on open mic. Good morning, Dick.
Hi, good morning. Let's go on to the McAllister thing. This is a touchy-feely thing that they, it's going to be in their face here. I've had a conversation with Norm McAllister, and I told him point blank that I'm not going to get involved in this court case, but I've got a problem with officials down there overthrowing an election process in Franklin County. He has been elected by the people up here, and there is no authority for these senators to vote him out of office or suspend him. They got another problem right behind this is if they do suspend him and he has no voting option, that's another violation of the Vermont Constitution because we're not going to be duly represented by two senators that have equal access to the voting process or the committees. The third problem here coming down the pike is without 30 senators and 150 representatives fully instituted and in position to conduct business, anything these people do beyond that point is invalid. What? These guys have no idea what they're doing, and the problem here is, and we went through this when Howard Dean had no oath of office for about 8 months, we dealt with that situation that the Supreme Court finally had to deal with that also. There's a constitutional procedure here to be followed. And I basically, these people don't want to follow it. And I know one thing. We don't need any more lawyers down there in the legislative branch of government because they're running a dual purpose of being part of the judicial branch through their lawyer affiliations. And there's no separation of powers here between the judicial and the legislature when you have lawyers involved.
Let me ask this, Dick, just because this piques my curiosity. You had mentioned that because we're not going to have 30 senators and 150 legislators seated,
right,
that, in fact, what they do is invalid. But let me ask this question. What happens if somebody is ill for the entire legislative session or has military service during that legislative session. Does that still apply?
Well, you see, if you're not there to do your job and you're being paid by the Vermonters here, the taxpayers are footing the bill for your salary and your benefits, so your food and housing down there. If you're not there, you're really not in position to do that job. The problem here is what we're trying to do is getting a couple of lawyers and a gun-grabbing thug down there thinking that they can overthrow an election in Franklin County, and that should be very disturbing because if they set the precedent of doing this, then they'll figure that they can do it to anybody in the future.
Thanks, Dick. I appreciate the phone call. Dick has a has an opinion about Norm McAllister. Do you? Let's go to Rama in Williamstown. Rama, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Morning, Mike. I'm going to really kind of get off of your topics there, so I'm going to talk really quick here. But it has to do with what Dick was called up about. And one of the comments he made that they would be deprived of their constitutional right for have both of their senatorial representatives from Franklin County. Well, that whole system in Vermont, how we apportion out the senatorial seats, certainly, and most probably the representative seats in Vermont, is on itself constitutional because, as Dick stated quite correctly, he's got two senators that represent him down in the state house.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in Orange County. I have one. And although I know they say, well, they divvy it up by population, the truth is when Dick walks into a voting booth, he gets to vote for two different senators. I walk into a voting booth, I only get to pick one. In Chittenden County, they get to pick six. So the whole system itself right now is unconstitutional and needs to be contested. But unfortunately, that if you do it by the Vermont statutes without trying to go through the federal courts, you got to wait till the next census, the decennial census, to do it.
But let me ask you this, Rama. It's... You know, we used to have a legislator for every community in Vermont before reapportionment. And reapportionment was a mandate to have a one-person, one-vote based upon a Supreme Court. If you don't have the same population as Franklin County, why would you deserve another senator?
Well, it's not that we deserve another senator. It's Dick doesn't deserve any more senators than I deserve. If the representation... And the government was based on an individual's right to be represented to the government, not on a group's right to be represented. So, as I said, you know, to be repetitious, Dick gets to vote. He has two senators. I only have one. If you live in the Chittenden County senatorial district, you get six. So the individuals each have a disproportionate number of senatorial representatives. And, you know, I was putting together stuff to try to contest this the last decennial census, but I didn't have time or the energy really to get through to doing it. But I know I'm not the only person concerned with this. And, you know, it's a thing I'm absolutely sure would fly in federal court if somebody had the time, expense, and experience in order to see it through. I mean, that the state of Vermont laws make it actually quite easy to do it at the appropriate time. But
thanks, Rama. I really appreciate it. I'm not quite following that, but you know, nonetheless, that is that's an opinion, and that's what we encourage here: comments and opinions. The question that I'm going to ask in the second hour: what do you think should be the priority of this year's legislature? And I will invite your phone calls. As a matter of fact, I would appreciate your phone calls and welcome them on your opinions and comments by calling us at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. But coming up, we'll talk with Betsy Bishop, president of the Vermont Chamber of Commerce. And she'll be joining us here in our Radio Vermont studios. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. It's my pleasure to have in our Radio Vermont studios Betsy Bishop, president of the Vermont Chamber of Commerce. Welcome, Betsy.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
Let's jump right into it. The economy, according to the Castleton State Poll, is the number one issue in Vermont. What What is the chamber doing to help boost the Vermont economy?
You know, for many years, the Vermont Chamber has a 5-person lobbying team. And for many, many years, we go down and work in the legislature on individual issues that are coming up for that particular year. And we do a pretty good job of that representing businesses. But we've really started to think about a longer term strategy and thinking about how do we grow the economy for the state of Vermont. And over the last 5 years, we've really repositioned the Vermont Chamber to really think about that. So everything that we're doing is focused on economic growth, including our advocacy. It makes it very difficult when in 2008, 2009, we went through a really difficult recession. And when you look at the numbers now, some of the ones that you talked about at the top of the hour, we're coming back. We're doing better. But we're not booming growth. When you look at the national economy, I think you see the same thing there. Yesterday, as sort of the first day back on the stock market, was a little bit of a roller coaster ride, mostly down. And when you think about those things at the national level, you think about what's happening internationally, and you bring that to Vermont, and how does Vermont stand out, and what can Vermont do to be think about our economic growth? Those are some particular challenges. And those are things that we need to think about in our legislation, what we're doing on a daily and yearly basis at the legislature. And we need to think about how each year that creates a path for success for Vermont businesses to grow, for Vermont people to have better incomes and better jobs. And that's what we're focused on.
So how do you do that?
So it's certainly not easy. There's no, you know, if there was a silver bullet, I think everybody would be doing it, because in my experience, most legislators, most governors, most and anybody participating in this process believes in job growth, believes in economic growth, but we're not seeing that to the extent that we want to be able to see. So one of the things, I think the key things that the state has to get under control is our budget. I think when you look at the state budget, and the facts are, you know, we're spending at 5% rate, where our revenues are coming in at 2.5% to 3% rate. Over time, that really hurts us. And we're doing all sorts of things to make that be a balanced budget, which is good. But then we come in every January with a gap. We're looking at this $40 million gap coming in this session. We're looking at almost a $60 million gap to solve for FY17. Those are pretty substantial numbers for the state of Vermont. Last year, we raised a total of $52 million to balance the budget. If we have to do something along that magnitude again this year, that's really something that's not leading us toward economic growth. Because as you think about those taxes, people have to absorb those, businesses have to absorb those. So we're really focused on that, you know, suggesting that we don't continue to increase taxes and fees in that way, but instead really look deeply at the budget and think about what can we do differently there. And we saw some of that work last year. We did see the legislature make some tough decisions and do some cuts within the budget, but the spending was still outpacing the revenue growth.
One of the things, there's two things you can do to balance a budget. One is to, as you just said, raise taxes. The other way is to cut expenses. And you had mentioned about cutting expenses and doing things differently. Is there anything that the chamber is advocating to do something differently in the budget?
Yeah, we are not advocating for a specific cut in the budget, but instead we think there's actually a third way, and that is economic growth. We think that if we were to start to focus on that, and the problem with economic growth is there's not one thing that you can do today, or two things that you can do today, that is going to be that trick to do that. Otherwise, we would have all figured that out. But we need to begin to focus on that. When we look at some of the opportunities and economic development bills that we've had pass in recent sessions, they are interesting things that are trying to move the dial forward, but they're really not massive focus on economic growth. And what we're suggesting is that we begin that process immediately. And there are some ways to do that. But when every year you're faced with how do we solve a $40 million problem that's being predominantly driven by Medicaid, or perhaps a $60 million problem for the following year by that same thing. Your focus is all about those services and how we solve for them. That would be much easier if we had a growing population, if we had growing businesses, if we had economic growth occurring. And we just are really seeing it at a very low level. 2.5% is really, being kind, I would call that modest economic growth.
But developing an economic growth strategy and having the results from an economic growth strategy it takes a long time to do that.
Absolutely.
I mean, the demographics you just mentioned, changing that whole thing. We're the second oldest state in the nation. We have our youth that are leaving the state. All of those sort of things are a long-term strategy, and they don't have immediate results.
That's true.
So the budget still has a problem. I mean,
and so you have to do all things at once. That's why governing is so difficult, right? So I think you have to solve for the current budget gap that you have. We would suggest after the $52 million in taxes last year not to go there. We'll see how revenues perform. Sometimes as the spring goes on, revenues perform a little bit better, although I'm a little bit nervous with the December lack of snow. Maybe January we'll see us bounce back on that. So certainly that would be helpful. But there are some things that you can do in the short term, but there's also some things that you can do so that you're not setting up challenges for businesses in the future. When we look back at the last 5 years of the different taxes, fees, and mandates that have been imposed on businesses, it's really at the same time that we're trying to recover from the recession, it's been difficult to absorb those because those have been coming fast. So what we're looking for is just to take a little bit of a pause there on some of those impacts that are coming on to businesses and saying, let us catch up with a policy that you've put in place so that as the economy only grows at 2.5%, there's only so much businesses can absorb.
We're speaking with Betsy Bishop, who is the president of the Vermont Chamber of Commerce. If you wish to join our conversation, give us a call at our WDEV studios at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Of course, legislators are looking at a variety of things, and you talked about, you know, one of the worst things I could do is sort of raise taxes again on businesses. But yet there's a couple of things that are floating around in the legislature. One is the carbon tax. Where's the Vermont Chamber on the carbon tax?
We oppose that, just plain and simple. We're pleased to hear some of the key leaders saying that the time is not now for the carbon tax.
But that means it may be later.
It does mean that it's maybe later, and I think that's, you know, a well-deployed strategy that we've seen over the years, is that we will get something really, really small and just get started, and we'll have something in name. It usually often will start with a study, and then the study comes back the second year and with all the facts and figures that you need to move it forward, and then it starts small and grows over time. And I think that's something that we're aware of, and we're using this time to be able to reach out to predominantly our manufacturing members and talk to them about the what their concerns are. Energy costs are a big cost of doing business in Vermont, and while we're our picture of our energy costs look good when we're comparing ourselves to New England, they're still quite high. So it's something that we have to look at how the carbon tax plays, especially in its most extreme form when they're talking about these incredible prices that they're talking about adding as a tax. It's just untenable.
The Democratic leadership has said that mandatory sick time is a priority. What's the chamber's position on that?
We traditionally have been opposed to that. It's not something that we see as a must-have. About 2 years ago, there was a discussion going on in the legislature about having minimum wage and paid sick leave. And about 2 years ago, the notion was, which one is more important for employees? And at that time, we're going to look at the minimum wage. We're going to put in a 4-year increase. And we're just in the middle of that 4-year increase. And what we were hoping for and what the discussion was 2 years ago is we would let that 4-year increase roll until, and then we would not put that other paid sick leave mandate on top of it. Clearly that agreement is no longer in play. But when we look at that and when we talk to the majority of our members, they already provide paid sick time, mostly paid time off. We call it PTO or combined time off in some way. They already are providing that. There's certainly employers out there who do not provide that, and I think that's what this bill is intended to do.
Yeah. Aren't most of the employers that don't do this, I mean, not all, but most of the employers that don't do this are very small businesses that don't provide this? And
would this
have an impact on them?
Oh, very, very much so. And I think the impact is not just one, it's cost in a couple of ways. So it's the most obvious cost, but it is, if you're a very small business, you then also have very few employees. So the flexibility that you have to fill that ability, that's where the problems come in. So I think there's that. I also think that in the bill, there's an accumulation factor, and I think some businesses are concerned about carrying on that liability against their payroll over time. So I think those are some of the issues that are going to be brought up. I do hear from all leadership that this is, it's passed the House. The version that has passed is accommodated some of the business's concerns. We're going to hopefully address some of the other concerns going forward. But really, we're trying to focus more on what can we do to help businesses. Are there areas in state government that, quite frankly, we're in protect mode this year? When you look at a budget of $40 million deficit just in the budget adjustment, and then you look at, $60 million coming up, it's not the year to come in and ask for huge new programs for economic growth. And Vermont has some good programs that are stable and that we support and that we would like to make sure that those programs continue. We can talk about some of those programs if you want, some of those areas that help businesses. I think that's something that we'll look forward to this year.
Let's come back to that issue in just a moment. We're speaking with Betsy Bishop, who is the president of the Vermont Chamber of Commerce. If you wish to join our conversation, call us at our WDEV studios at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. A lot of stuff is going to be happening in the legislature. Marijuana legislation is predicted to be one of the issues that's going to be addressed this year. Does the chamber have a position on that?
We're working on that. We did a deep dive with sort of all sides. There's apparently more than just two sides on this issue, but our board of directors did a deep dive, and we have a position that we're putting together now. But I think it's fair to say that we're quite concerned about adding this legislation to the Vermont economy right now. We're really looking at how that might impact the workplace. Our focus on that particular issue is there's a lot of issues with that, with legalizing marijuana, but our expertise is the workplace. What does that do in the workplace? What are the employer's responsibilities? And we already have some concerns about drug-free workplaces and making sure that it's a safe place to come to work, and we would like to continue that. So that's where our focus will be on that issue.
Driving the budget deficit in 2016 is the Medicaid issue, the continuing overspending of the Medicaid budget, and that is driving sort of the big portion of the deficit in the 2016. That's the budget we're currently in. There's a budget gap for the 2017, which we'll talk about in a little while. Healthcare, obviously, Medicaid is part of the healthcare issue. What's your organization's position on Health Connect and the exchange?
We have not been pleased with Vermont Health Connect for 3 years running. I would say finally last year we got a workaround to be able to enroll directly with the insurers. It's odd for anybody in Vermont to say thank goodness for the insurers, but thank goodness for the insurers, because without them businesses would still be plagued with trying to use a system that doesn't work. To this day it doesn't work for businesses. They have gotten it to a point where apparently it works for individuals. There's still some, I think the grade on that is still not fully delivered. But I, for businesses, working into that portal has just never worked for us. So using the website as a tool is not good. And then once you get in there, we're still forced to use the products that are in there, limiting our choices. Our costs have gone up. Nothing that was promised was delivered. You know, ease of access, comparing a choice, one-stop shopping, greater choice, lower cost. None of that happened for businesses. So I don't see we've spent hundreds of millions of dollars on Vermont Health Connect, and we, as businesses, we don't see that benefit.
There's a big push. There will be a big push in this legislative session to sort of move towards the all-payer model. There is a request now to CMS, which is the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services, dealing with a waiver for all payer. What's the chamber's position on all
payer? We haven't weighed into that debate. Our focus has really been on Vermont Health Connect and really on the choices that Vermont businesses have for insurance and the cost of insurance. When we look at access, we think, you know, Vermont is doing a very good job in how many people have access. We were before healthcare reform 3 years ago, and we're about at that same level, maybe a little bit better now with Vermont Health Connect. So access, our quality of care is excellent in this state. We have yet to really focus on cost. I think what the Green Mountain Care Board has been doing of late, we have seen some progress there. But, you know, one of the things that we look at with this whole debate, how do you solve the Medicaid problem? How do you solve the cost of healthcare problem? You look at all of that. We know that Vermont businesses have been paying, anybody in the commercial sector has been paying much more than their share. And this cost shift that, you know, the government has this desire to expand Medicaid over time. You can see what happens when they expand Medicaid. They run deficits year over year over year. And they're even running deficits while performing a cost shift on businesses that is still making our health insurance more costly than it should be. So we have some things we need to get in order first before we continue expansion after expansion, and we should solve that. Last year, the governor's answer was a 11% payroll tax, that some of that was promised to come back to businesses. We asked for the details. We asked to see how that formula would work, how that money would get returned to us. We never saw those details. We opposed that hard. And when that got down to, from 11% down to 0.7%, it didn't matter the number. The formula of returning the money just wasn't there. So it wasn't correcting the problem, which was why we opposed that. We see a new proposal this year on expanding Medicaid again, and it's got a 2% payroll tax. These aren't new ideas. They're different versions of the same idea. And we still are running a $40 million deficit here for Medicaid that we have now.
Of course, government participates in this cost shift because they underfund the Medicaid reimbursement rate. There's an effort to expand Dr. Dinosaur. It's called Dr. Dinosaur 2.0. It basically expands the Medicaid program yet again. Where's the chamber's position on that?
You know, it's for us, it's not about the program or the goodness of expanding Dr. Dinosaur to 26-year-olds. It's not about that for us. It's about the financing of it. We can't afford the Medicaid program that we have now. Expanding it should be the last thing on our minds until we figure out how we're going to afford what we have now. We expanded Medicaid last year. And we, 2 years ago, and we don't have a plan for paying for that. And that's part of what's driving these latest deficits. So I think we've really got to pay attention to our finances. Sometimes when you want something, before you can go get it, you've got to figure out how to pay for it or whether or not you can actually afford that. And I think that's where Vermont is.
We're speaking with Betsy Bishop, the president of the Vermont Chamber. We'll continue our discussion with Betsy in a moment. When we return, I want to talk about what is the reception of your message with legislators? This is Open Mic.
Dale, have you ever thought about what we do here at LaRue Brothers as craftsmanship?
That's an interesting description, Ron. Like many Vermont artisans, we are highly experienced, and we take pride in the quality of our work, and we utilize a substantial level of creativity in product modifications and problem solving.
Our LaRue certified rebuilt transmissions might even be considered functioning sculpture. Each transmission is painstakingly rebuilt to exceed manufacturer's specifications. A LaRue certified rebuilt transmission could be compared to a fully restored stained glass window, a functioning result of a caring, knowledgeable craftsperson.
Ron, you're choking me up, really. Folks, here at LaRue Brothers Transmissions, we painstakingly rebuild your vehicle's transmission piece by piece, improving its performance using proprietary processes based on our field-proven experience.
When you need a transmission that features the pride of genuine craftsmanship, call LaRue Brothers, 1-800-420-4330, and on the web at LaRueBrothers.com.
Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We're speaking with Betsy Bishop, who is the president of the Vermont Chamber. We're talking about the Chamber's legislative priorities for Vermont businesses. If you wish to join our conversation, call us at our WDEV studios at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. We just addressed a lot of concerns that Vermont businesses have, taxes, those other issues, the expansion of Medicaid and how that impacts businesses, Vermont Health Connect, all of those things that will have an impact on businesses. When you go to the legislators, how receptive are they to the business concerns?
I think what we hear from most policymakers is they're very interested in what businesses have to say. But sometimes when it comes down to whether we're going to push this issue forward or not, whether that becomes a priority, sometimes that's where the difficulty is. So they're very receptive, very open, want to learn more. But sometimes when you have to move something forward, that becomes an issue. I have two examples for you. For the last 4 or 5 years, the business community has brought forward the concept of clarifying independent contractors. Right now in Vermont, if you're a sole proprietor, you might have your own business. Sometimes you are working on a contract, whether that's in construction or the technology industry or any other way. Our laws are very confusing. There's federal laws and there's two different state laws that describe what an independent contractor is. It's so confusing that many times the Department of Labor has said to employers, this person's not an independent contractor. They're actually an employee and you need to extend to them unemployment insurance, workers' comp, all of that. It has gotten very, very murky over the last 3 or 4 years. So we've come forth with several suggestions about how to fix that. And what we've seen is a willingness on, I would say, we have a coalition of Republicans, Democrats, progressives, and independents that have all said, yeah, we've got to do this, and we're working with this coalition. But after 4 years, we still don't have a solution. So receptive to hearing it, interested in trying to figure it out, but not really pushing it over the goal line.
What's the hurdle there?
The hurdle there is that if there are more people who are actually as employees, then you have everybody covered by workers' comp, everybody covered by UI. When you're a sole proprietor, all the money that comes into your business is for you. It's your salary, it's your health care, it's your workers' compensation, and you have the ability to waive workers' compensation, of course, because you're going to be, that's just your other pocket. That's what a sole proprietor is. And so it depends on how you categorize those people. So trying to get to a place where we can figure out those definitions so that they're simplified and that we can have a clear path for an independent contractor in Vermont, which is a lot of Vermonters, that's what we need to do. And there's no disagreement about the goal. There's just no agreement on how to get there, regardless of how many different proposals have been put out.
It's interesting, Betsy. I'm sitting here scratching my head because it seems so simple.
Right? It really does. And and I think that's the difficulty, is it just seems simple. But when you do the test and you walk through the test, there's a provision in there about like work. If this independent contractor is hired to do similar work that you're already doing as a business, then that's the hardest hurdle to get over. And then therefore they should be an employee. And we are just trying to narrow that definition of like work so that more people can operate as independent contractors if they so choose.
Second issue, you said.
The second issue. So that's an issue where we don't see progress, where we see reception, but not progress. Another issue happened last year where the Vermont Chamber brought forth an initiative to start marketing Vermont as a place to do business, as a place to live, as a place to work, not just as a destination. We do a marvelous job in tourism marketing, and we will continue to do that. But let's build on that foundation and say, man, if you love coming here for a weekend or a whole week skiing, why don't you come to Vermont and try us for a lifetime? Come here and build a business. Come here and work. We have job openings. So we brought that forward last year. The governor put it in his State of the State last year, and his agency pushed that forward. Both the House Commerce Committee and the Senate Economic Development Committee took a lot of testimony on that, grasped that idea, and at the end of the day, we were able to push that forward, and there was a new marketing initiative established that I think we're going to start to see come to fruition late spring, early summer of this year to do just that, to tell the people who love Vermont because of our world-class recreation and maybe our beer and our cheese, but tell them that there's also a way that you can live and work here.
What should the governor talk about in his State of the State address?
I hope he talks about economic growth. I hope he talks about how we need to establish that foundation for economic growth and something that will put us on a good trend for the future. I think there are certainly some areas, some existing programs that I hope that he will support. We'll probably see those more in his budget address than we will see in his State of the State address. But putting Vermont on a path, this is his last year, and making sure that that path is something that others can follow, that we can make sure that there's a growth path for us, I think that's really important. Getting the budget under control is probably the biggest thing that government can do for the rest of Vermonters.
Last year, he surprised businesses with a payroll tax.
Yes.
Do you expect any surprises this year?
I should never say never. I think his comments leading up to this week have been fairly tepid, that there would be not many big surprises, no tax increases. But yeah, the payroll tax last year was a huge surprise, and I certainly hope that we don't have another huge surprise like that.
I think the problem with the payroll tax, at least from my perspective, is trying to explain the payroll tax and the savings is about as clear as mud.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anybody could do that last year, and thus the demise of a payroll tax.
Well, and I think the concept there was, we'll fix the cost shift by raising the payroll tax. And from my perspective, representing businesses in the state, we would like to fix the cost shift because employers are paying too much. If you just ask us to pay it in a payroll tax, you actually haven't fixed the problem. You've just asked us to pay differently. So that didn't really fix the problem at all.
Getting back to the legislature, the National Chamber obviously has been very active in elections, endorsing candidates, funding candidates, with their PAC, funding certain commercials against candidates. Does your organization do that? Do you endorse candidates? Do you fund elections?
So first of all, in the chamber world, there's about 7,500 chambers across the country, and we're all independent. So we share the same name, chamber, but we're not affiliated or associated in any way. So the Vermont Chamber is operated by its own board of directors and does make its own decisions. We do have a PAC that is affiliated with the Vermont Chamber of Commerce. It's called the Campaign Research Center. We raise money every year. And for many years, we've really just focused on mostly on state house races and really looking at how we can make a difference in a handful of races instead of across a broad spectrum. I would say over the last two election cycles, we've modified that a little bit, and we've tried to help candidates who we also do a report card, and whose grades on the report card reflect our priorities.
Do your members know which legislators from your perspective have been naughty and which has been nice?
Well, we do it. We do a report card so that we have published that. So we do that. We do a weekly report and certainly give out kudos and also point out people who have introduced things that weren't so helpful. So we certainly do that. I spent the last 6 months traveling around the state, 35 different stops across the state, talking about legislation and our total impact list with a lot of our businesses in each of those stops as well.
I wanted to talk about your total impact list mm-hmm. a little bit. Just explain what a total impact list means and what you discovered.
We really just started to keep a list of all the proposals last year. Last year was a very active year when it came to tax proposals, fee proposals, assessments. They came by so many different names. To me, they're all tax increases of some kind. And we started to keep a list, and it was really daunting. And so at the end of the year, we tallied it all up. And depending on who you talk to, we'll talk about, well, we only raised $30 million in our tax package last year. Well, that's actually a correct statement. The tax package was only $30 million. But when you tally up all the taxes that were raised last year, it was $52 million in taxes and fees on Vermonters and Vermont businesses. So what we really started to do is think about, is this something that we can put together? So we did the total impact list for 2015. We're keeping track of the proposals for 2016, and they're quite varied already. And we were encouraged by our members to do a five-year look back. They said it's not just what passed in 2015. As much as $52 million seems like a big number, it's also what has passed over the last number of years that we're trying to absorb and keep ahead of. And so we've started to fill out that past five-year look back as well.
And the total amount?
We have not gotten to that total amount. We've seen some other people's numbers. They're shocking, frankly, in the hundreds of millions of dollars. And I guess we haven't gone back those 5 years and done that amount. But we're in the process of doing that. But we want to make sure those are facts before we lay that out.
We've talked about some of your concerns, but there are some good programs that do help your
Absolutely.
Members. Could you sort of mention a couple of those?
Sure. So for every year, we will, there's a couple of areas, programs that we try to protect and in good years try to help grow. So top on that list is the Vermont Training Program. It's a skills-based training program. It's out of the Agency of Commerce. And in its heyday, probably 8 years ago, it was up to about $2 million. It's down a little bit closer to $1 million now. We would really like to see that over time get back to about a $2 million fund. This is an investment in people. It's an investment in their skills and upgrading their skills. So I think that's a program that we are pretty high on. We protect the Tourism and Marketing Fund. It's about $2 million of promotional funding, which again is not a lot of money, but really to sing the praises of Vermont as a destination. We talked a little bit about marketing Vermont more broadly, so we work toward making sure that happens. There is an incentive program in the state called VEGI. It's the Vermont Employment Growth Incentive Fund. It is up for extension this year. We'll be supporting that and hoping for that extension. It's really the only meaningful incentive program that we have in the state, and it works well and has a good track record. And then I think there'll be a big conversation this year about the Enterprise Fund and whether or not we continue that or not. And that is a fund with started with about $4.5 million, ended up with about $2 million. And this is basically cash to incent businesses for various employment growth. There's a board, the governor and legislators are on the board to figure out who that goes to. It's the first time ever that it happened over the last 2 years. It was a really innovative idea, very small amount of money, and I'd like to see that continue.
One of the things that you obviously do is you set up programs that educate people, mm-hmm. and you have an economic conference coming up?
We do. For 25 years, Art Wolf and Dick Heaps used to put on an economic conference the first Friday of the legislative session, and after 25 years announced last year that they were ending that, and the Vermont Chamber went to Dick and Art and asked if we could somehow work with them to extend that. So the Vermont Chamber is putting that on this year, and we're bringing in a national economist to talk about the state of the national economy. I keep hearing that there's a recession on the three-year horizon and wondering a little bit said, if we're going to actually see that. We're going to have Art Wolf come and do the perspective from the state economy. And then we're going to unveil our futures project. It's something that's brand new for the Vermont Chamber, but we have decided to really invest in securing the economic future for Vermont. We've not seen folks, policy leaders, anybody really thinking about the future. We think about, gee, what's going to happen in this year's legislative session. And the Vermont Chamber and our lobbying team has been doing that for years. We're going to start on Friday. We're going to unveil our futures project that is going to take the data that we have and showcase where we are today and make some judgments about where we should be and where we should go. And then over time, we'll make some recommendations about exactly how we can move that dial from where we are to where we should be.
I hear on occasion various businesses saying they just can't afford to stay in Vermont anymore, and they have made the decision to move. Do you hear that? And do you hear it on a regular basis or on an occasional basis?
I sometimes hear that more in the way people just generally talk. I don't hear it from specific businesses who say, I'm moving. I think the decision to move is a very difficult one. And I don't think that it's something that is taken on lightly. And it's often not just one issue. Often the owners personal experience and that's driven by that. But I think paying attention to cost of business is certainly one thing that we can do, our government can do, so that is not one of the factors that is taken into account.
Sometimes questions pop into my head from left field. This is probably one of them that just popped into my into my mind. But there seems to be momentum, a convergence of the left and the right to change how utility projects are reviewed and approved in Vermont. Does the chamber have any position on that?
We don't, because I think, like you say, this discussion is just starting. I think we've had this separation of utility projects and other development projects, and I think that's a really intriguing conversation that we have not developed a position on as of yet.
If people want to know more about the chamber, want to know more about what you do, or want to join the chamber, mm-hmm. where do they go?
Go to our website at vtchamber.com. You can follow us on Twitter at vtchamber. You can find us on Facebook. You can find me just about, just Google, it's bbishop at vtchamber.com. It's not hard to find.
One of the things that you do is produce a wonderful legislative update on a weekly basis, mm-hmm. I believe it is, while the legislature's in session. And I would urge people that don't belong to the chamber to join the chamber for that purpose.
Thank you.
And
yes.
And because you get so much information about what's going on. Many people are so busy mm-hmm. trying to make a living that they really don't understand what's going on. So
they don't have the time to delve into the issues.
Hey, Betsy, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
I really appreciate it. Like I said, we've just been talking to Betsy Bishop, who is the president of the Vermont Chamber of Commerce. And, of course, the chamber is a very important player here in Vermont. It represents businesses here in the state of Vermont. And as I said, as we move into the second hour, I'd be really curious. We've been talking with Betsy about some of the priorities that businesses have in the legislature, but I'd be really curious, what do you think should be the priority of this year's legislature? And one of the things that we talked about earlier, and that I think is important, what issue? Is it the budget? We talked about that with Betsy. Is it health care? Again, we talked about that with Betsy. We talked about, earlier in the segment, we talked about Norm McAllister. We talked about, are opiates an issue? All of those issues are something that I would be very curious in terms of what you think should be the priority of the legislature. And of course, we talked about the fact that the economy is always the number one issue. If you think that's the number one issue, would welcome your phone call at 802-244-1777 after the break, or toll free 877-291-8255. This is Open Mic on WDEV AM 550, broadcasting from Waterbury, Vermont, 96.1 FM from Warren, 96.5 FM from Barrie, and 101.9 FM from Island Pond. Of course, we're streaming worldwide at WDEVradio.com. Your phone calls next. Does Congress come back in a few weeks?
Congress is back.
Oh, they're back.
Yes. So we'll see what they do, if anything. The State of the Union is next Tuesday night, and of course we will be there.
And what else is happening down there, Ellen?
Okay, the other thing that's interesting is Hillary Clinton and Area 51. She talked about how she wanted to get to the bottom of that, et cetera. What I happen to know for an absolute fact is that President Clinton was obsessed about Area 51, sent one of his envoys there. And although, of course, 51 was open to him, part of the area that supposedly has the aliens in it from Roswell, New Mexico, they would not let President Clinton's envoy see it. So there is something going on that we don't know about, and that's what's happening on that front. And the other, of course, issue is Saudi Arabia and what's happening with Iran. Saudi Arabia has gotten some affiliate countries, places like Bahrain, which is connected to Saudi Arabia by a causeway, and where lots of Saudi Arabians go on weekends to drink, has also said that they were, and I think there's now five countries that say they are removing their diplomatic relationship with Iran because they are allied with Saudi Arabia.
I've got to go back to Area 51. I've just got to go back.
Okay, go for it.
I mean, is this what this presidential campaign is coming down to, is Area 51? If President Clinton wanted to know what was going on, he could have flown out there and gone, couldn't he?
Maybe. Well, he would have flown, but I think as President of the United States, you don't go show up at Area 51, and I doubt whether Hillary Clinton would as well.
I just find this fascinating. Of course,
I just read a book over the holidays, which is the Everything You Wanted to Know About Everything or something like that. And anyway, there are so many galaxies out there, and there's 100 to 200 billion stars in our galaxy alone, that if every galaxy, known galaxy in the universe, was the size of a pea, it would fill up the Albert Hall in London. That's how many galaxies there are. So there's probably extraterrestrial life somewhere. We just haven't contacted it. Maybe that's a good thing.
Well, maybe July 4th, Independence Day, we'll see something.
Oh, I understand it's big in this new movie, yeah.
Hey, Ellen, as always, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll see you later. We'll be right back. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. In this hour, we're going to be talking about what do you think should be the priority of this year's legislature? Is it the economy? Is it the budget? Is it the passage of a carbon tax? Is it opiates? Is it the legalization of marijuana? Is it reforming our social welfare system or our education finance system or our health care system? Should gun control be an objective? It's a big issue today nationally. Should it be an objective with the Vermont legislature? Is mandatory sick leave a priority for you? So what do you think should be the priority of the legislature this year? Give us a call at our WDEV studios, 802-244-1777, or toll free at 877-291-8255. Let's go to Whit in South Carolina. Whit, I hope you're warmer than we are up here.
Well, we have been, and this morning we were 24, but we're going to warm up to about 50 to 60. So, it's, you know, we just got to hang in there.
Yeah, I'm going to cut you off. You keep saying 54 degrees. Go ahead, Whit.
Oh, God. That was so funny with Ellen. But anyway, what I wanted to say was one thing that I, as a sort of a disconnected individual here, hear about budgets, and I hear individual you had on this morning from the chamber, and I've forgotten her name, but her first name.
Betsy Bishop.
Yeah, Betsy. Medicaid, big issue. Well, look, you had another guest on a couple weeks ago, and he was hoping that he could get more tax money to include older siblings, not siblings, but
up to 26-year-olds.
Daughters.
Yeah.
And look, look, you're dancing around the elephant in the living room, and that's the high cost of medical care. Why do doctors get paid 2 to 7 times more in the U.S. than they do in England or any other country? And Wall Street Journal, you can go to the internet and see how much more doctors make. I mean, we just had a doctor in St. Albans say, well, I'm a pediatrician. I'm leaving because I can't make enough money. Well, I mean, I need a little bit more information on how much money he thought he needed to make.
Well, he's going to South Carolina, so he
Is that where he's going?
Yes, he must be able to make more money down there.
Well, I've got a cousin who's a graduate of the UVM Medical School who is not right here in this area, but he's in Columbia, old Peter, and he does breast reductions, and he is a multi-millionaire. I said multi-millionaire. And he doesn't even take, like, I think he takes some kind of insurance, but I don't think he gets the Medicaid. We have to investigate why healthcare is costing so much more. We have physicians, and I don't mean to pick on doctors, but we got the AMA, we got the AAP, the ACOG, and a whole list that goes on, dermatology. They've all got powerful lobbies in Washington. They've got far more money than the healthcare consumer. And you don't think that these people have a voice in Washington in what's going on? Medical schools have not increased their output of doctors in the U.S. in about 25 to 30 years. And we have more elders coming online that are going to need medical services. We have an educational system that's antiquated. Why is it in Canada and in England you do 3 years as an undergrad, you take your science and your math, then you apply to medical school, and then you do a 3-year medical school plus an internship? Oh, no, we can't have that here. We have to have this long, protracted education. But is there any evidence that Canadian doctors are less qualified than those in England?
No.
So, you see, we have a system that's just completely broke, and until we can get at it or somebody can say, hey, look, stop, because we know what you're up to. You're trying to control supply and demand. Let's have more doctors, or let's change the educational system. But it's a dinosaur. It's not going to change, is it? So, I don't know. Until we can see that, I'm so tired of people saying, well, you know, healthcare is costing too much. We've got to raise taxes. Well, why is healthcare going up 6% a year? Let's find out why.
Yeah, you know, you raise an interesting point, Whit, and I think that it's something that needs to be addressed. It is the cost of healthcare, because it doesn't matter what mechanism you use to fund or finance, whether it's single payer or whether it's something else. It doesn't matter if you don't get the control off, you don't get control of the cost. You're going to bankrupt everything and everybody. And you're absolutely right, Whit. The cost is something that needs to be investigated on how we can lower that cost. The revenue side of the issue is, and the delivery mechanism of that, how you pay for it, I mean, is something that is secondary if you don't get the cost under control. Because if it's government run, you're going to bankrupt it. If it's private run, you're going to bankrupt it. And Whit makes a good point that getting the cost under control, I think, is something that's very important. So what we're discussing today is, what do you think should be the priority of this year's legislature? If you have an opinion, give us a call at our WDEV studios at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Is it the economy? Is it the budget? Is it the passage of a carbon tax? Is it the legalization of marijuana? Should gun control be an objective? Is it reforming our social welfare system or our education finance system or our healthcare system, as Whit just called and talked about the cost of the system? Let's go to the phone lines. Let's go to Mary in Randolph Center. Mary, good morning. You're on open mic.
Good morning, Mike. I just want to tag on to what Whit was talking about with cost. I was having a conversation with my mom, who lives in New Jersey, the other day, and she was telling me about her neighbor, who is 97 years old, just had a birthday. And a couple of weeks ago, he went into his doctor, and they were doing a stress test for him. And he had to stop the stress test twice because he was, you know, not handling it well. And told my mother that he didn't think he was going to make it out of the office. So my question to my mother was, why in this world would they give a 97-year-old man a stress test? Yeah. And, you know, to see him walk out to the mailbox, you can tell he's elderly. He's old. He's but, you know, he lives in his own home and does his own thing. And but that's wasteful, in my opinion. Absolutely wasteful. And I think that's a huge, huge problem with this cost. Keep rising. It's just waste.
Yeah, Mary, it's interesting. You raise a really good question, is why is a 97-year-old taking a stress test? I you know, give me the 97, I'll take it.
I'll take it every day. Yeah.
Hey, Mary, thank you so much for your phone call. I really appreciate it. Mary from Randolph Center. What we're talking about in this hour, answer to the question, what do you think should be the priority of this year's legislature? Be really interested in what you think the priority should be for the legislature. Should it be legalizing marijuana or mandatory sick leave? Or is it the budget, keeping the budget under control? Is it opiates? That seems to be a huge issue in Vermont and seems to be driving a lot of the criminal behavior in Vermont. Is it reforming the social welfare system or the education finance system or health care? Should gun control, some legislators have called for gun control to be an objective of this legislative session, or is it other issues that you think are very important? Now, I had mentioned this at the top of the hour when we first came on at 9 o'clock. According to most polls, the economy is always the number one issue, and that's not different in Vermont. A poll conducted by the Castleton Polling Institute, Vermonters list economic issues as their top concern. And again, more than a third of Vermonters said that the economy, jobs, and the cost of living in Vermont was their top concern. And when you combine that with the aspect of taxes and government spending as a top concern, nearly half of Vermonters express financial or economic concerns as the issue foremost in their minds. And again, this should not come as a surprise. Like I said, most polls will have the economy as number one. But I think what is a concern is that we still have this angst about the condition of our economy coming out of the Great Recession of 2008 and 2009. And I think it has affected us. And even though we've been out of the recession, there still is slow job growth and rising taxes. And then the overall cost of living in Vermont that is making it more difficult for the average Vermonter to get ahead. And then you look worldwide and you look at world events and China's economy is slowing. You look at the stock market yesterday. That was predicated on China's economy and the fear that it's slowing down. And of course, our goods and services would not be sold in China and the impact that that would have on the United States. The Eurozone is having struggles economically. Russia's on the march, and the Middle East is in turmoil, as it always seems to be. And what's really scary is that since World War II, about every 7 years we have a downturn. So you know, Vermonters are concerned about the economy, but I'm interested in what your concern is. What should the legislature be focusing on this year? What should be their priority? What do you think it should be? Is it the economy that I just mentioned? Is it legalizing marijuana, which is something that others have advocated, that have called into this program advocating? Is it education finance reform, which leads to property tax reduction or property tax reform? Is it healthcare reform or is it gun control? Some legislators have called for gun control. Let's go to the phones and Ruth in Sheldon. Ruth, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning. I think the first thing the legislature should do is address the budget. And Betsy Bishop said it well. We can't afford what we have now. And that is the truth. Vermonters cannot afford what the legislature keeps putting on their backs. So I think the first thing they should do is take care of the budget, even if it means cutting programs. I would be for cutting programs. And that not spend one penny of our tax dollars addressing other issues like legalizing marijuana or the paid medical leave until they can get their own budget in order. And every year they extend the legislative session because they have to deal with the budget. They should do that first. That's what I would like to see. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Ruth. I was going to ask you if you had any ideas of where the budget is, it should be cut. Are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here. Yes, I have a lot of ideas, but they wouldn't be popular. But one way to cut the budget is not have all these studies that they, like for this Dr. Dinosaur 02, whatever it is. That's wasted money. And they shouldn't have any studies until they can take care of what they already have.
Mm-hmm. Anything else, Ruth, that you can think of that you would advocate to be cut? I'm presupposing you don't want to raise taxes, given what you've just
Absolutely.
Said.
Absolutely. No raising taxes.
So any other areas that you would advocate?
I would advocate abolishing the Human Rights Commission. But that wouldn't be a popular idea, but I think we could do well without it because we have a lot of laws that prevent discriminations. We don't need that agency at all. So, yes, there's a lot of things that could be cut. But the point is, the things that we have, we can't afford. So it's either going to have to be across the board or eliminate things that we don't need. But that's what we need to do. Hey. And again, I'll say thank you.
Hey, Ruth, thank you very much. Let's go to Rich in Huntington. Rich, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Some great points have been made in the last hour and a half, but I think no one in Montpelier with a D or a P in front of their name realizes or will admit that Vermont is in an economic death spiral, and they continue to keep proposing things like a motel tax. And boutique issues like the legalizing marijuana. I mean, to me, I don't know why it's not legal anyway, but we have the decriminalization. The only reason to go forward from that is for interests of revenue. The sick time thing is a huge burden on small businesses. If that's important to an employee, you can pick a job that does offer sick time, just like any other perk that is offered by a job, whether it's a free parking space or all the coffee you can drink. So some of the no-brainers as far as putting some limits on the legislature out of control behavior is to have a set adjournment date of like May 15th or April 30th, after which no one gets paid, no one gets reimbursed for mileage or meals. That's a no-brainer to me.
Hey, Rich, thank you very much for your phone call. I appreciate it. Let's go to Jerry in Callis. Jerry, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. I'm in agreement with the last two people that spoke. The number one problem here is our economy and the budget. And number one should be legislators should go and figure out how they can do the budget and make it balance and not be in a deficit. That's a pretty hard thing to do because they're so far into a deficit now because of all of their spending in the past on different programs. And the other problem is they shouldn't be looking for increased taxes or fees or anything on the people of Vermont. We're taxed out, and they've got to realize that sooner or later, people are going to just move right out of Vermont, and I'm thinking about it myself. If they continue to, I live on a fixed income. I'm almost 83 years old, and I can't even come up with the money to maintain my buildings and land anymore because it's all taken out with increased taxes every single year. And I know a lot of other people that they can't even, find a way either. in this area. And there's a lot of homes that are up for sale, but they're not selling because the increase in the assessment from the town of Calais prohibits it because people within the state of Vermont can't afford to buy these places, and you're going to get more outsiders coming in and buying up, and they're not the kind of people that we want to see in the state of Vermont as a rule. But anyway, there's a lot of cuts they can make. A lot of programs that they have enacted in the past, they can, you know, cut it back. And they can balance this budget somehow, some way this year without continuing with a deficit every fiscal year.
Hey, Jerry, thank you for the phone call. Let's go to Paul in Moncton. Paul, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Hey, several months ago, I had a chance to talk to Mark Johnson on his television program, then BPT, BPT, Vermont Public Television. Mm-hmm. He had on a Democrat, a Republican, and a progressive. And I asked one question. I said, who there in the legislature is actually making an effort to look at all these programs and investigate whether or not the money we're giving them is actually being well spent, whether they're achieving their goals? Has this been attacked at all? And every single one of them, so it's across party lines, stood up and said, well, we have Barbara Snelling. She's in charge of this group. And she's going there and she's looking and looking and everything. So I asked Mark Johnson a little while after that, another question. How many of those programs have seen their funding cut or have had them eliminated altogether because they're not achieving it? And he didn't know. So what that tells me is what they're paying lip service to the fact that they're not making an effort to make sure these programs are working. They're not making an effort to make sure that they're efficient and they're saving money. And we've seen over the past 3 years, a trooper who was flushing hours to the point of hundreds of thousands of dollars. Department of Liquor Control with inefficiencies. Department of Motor Vehicles with a computer system that they tried to update many years ago that failed outright. A court system with a computer system that failed outright. The point being that anytime you get big, whether you're private, public, profit, nonprofit, there is at minimum 10 up to 25% waste, fraud, inefficiencies built into your system. And we as private sector businesses have to every day look at those systems and try to make things work, especially when we get bills handed through government that make it more difficult for us to achieve our goals and do our jobs. None of that's happening at the public sector. And it's time just to go right across the board and say, you guys are all going to take a 10% cut right across the board. Every program is losing 10%. But you are going to still pay out and still hand out the same amount of services you did the previous year. You must find a way to make it work. And if you can't, you're going to lose your job, and we'll find someone else who will take that $100,000 a year job and make it work. There's other people can do it. I could do it. And anybody could do it if they actually put their mind to it. But unfortunately, there is no effort to hold these people accountable, I don't think.
Hey, Paul, thank you for your phone call. Let's go to Tom in Berlin. Tom, you're on open mic.
Yeah, good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
I got a couple ideas. First off, is the state of Vermont still purchasing land and then conserving it? And then, of course, it's a two-edged sword because most of the time there's either a reduction or a loss of taxes to the towns that this land's located in. And then, of course, we're the taxpayers that are putting this money up to buy all this land and then conserving it and putting limitations on its uses, and either from the sportsman's end or recreation end. And then I agree with your last caller is, I know they say there's a lot of set programs that you have to fund by law for the federal government, but there's a lot of other ones that I think right across the board, rather than argue and fight over who's going to lose what, is that whatever the percentage point it comes out to, that's what everybody loses across the board, and then we go from there.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Tom. I appreciate your call. Tom is advocating, and the caller before then is advocating across-the-board cuts. And Tom raised an interesting question, an interesting point, that not everything can be cut. You know, there are some things that are discretionary, some things that are mandatory that are required by the federal government. The Medicare and Medicaid programs, for example. Expansion is up to the state, as Betsy Bishop had talked about earlier in today's program. But the ability to cut out a program sometimes is prohibited by the federal government. But that shouldn't there is another thing. Look, that was brought up, and I think it was Tom that brought it up. The one thing that is interesting, are we reviewing these programs? And how are we delivering the service? Is it required? Should it be the same way that we've always done it? Does it make sense to do things differently? And it'd be interesting if we're looking at that as hard as we should at the state level. Let's go to George in Shelburne. George, you're on open mic.
Hi, how you doing?
Great, thank you.
My point that I'd like to make is we did a bill called S-9 last year, which was the Child Protection Act, okay? And when we did that, we put a provision in there for temporary custody. I saw an interview with a grandmother on WCAX, where she couldn't get DCF to work with her. But by rights in that provision of temporary custody, what should have happened was DCF should have sat down with this woman, said, we created this pathway through this new child protection law that we did last year, okay? And if you're willing to be vetted by this judge, you know, we can work with you to get custody of this child because we've empowered these judges more. We've opened up this avenue for people that have been directly connected with these children. And by rights, by implementing that law, should have saved the taxpayers of this state hundreds of thousands of dollars because once you get custody, you become responsible for that child. And it's unfortunate that we do these things in 1 minute and we get a mind cramp in the next and they're never applied. But another point I like to make is on this pot issue. My concerns with this is if I go in and purchase a firearm legally in this state, you know, where the firearms dealer who's licensed signed the paperwork, I'm not a felon, I don't do illegal drugs, I can walk in to a liquor store, buy a bottle of wine, come out, tap that ATF agent on the back, go to my vehicle, no problem. Now, how are you going to get me out of that pot store, you know, in the same manner when, you know, I'm not supposed to be possessing any illegal drug substance, you know, and, you know, I'm not supposed to have that firearm, you know, in regards, you know, to that Pacific area.
And the reason, you know, George... this is an interesting point. The reason is that even if you legalize it at the state level, it is still illegal at the federal level.
Oh, yeah, because federal law supersedes state law.
So you when know, you
so
would
I
be...
Mean, I understand they did this RAND report. I believe it's... I read most of it. It's 215 or 218 pages
right.
long. It's been a while since I've been into it. But, you know, in reality, what they did was euphoria here, in which they never took into consideration that the state of Vermont doesn't allow for our legislative branch to create any laws that impact individual rights and liberties.
So let
me, how are you going to have this pot law if you can't get that individual out of your pot store without violating their individual rights and liberties?
So the point that you're making is that if you sign that statement that says, you know, you don't do illegal drugs, and you go to a pot store, you're actually in violation of that statement you just signed. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, basically, you know, you're allowing for a background check to be done here on you. You've got to be pretty much a model citizen in this state to purchase a firearm. And, you know, I mean, rightly so, because we really don't need these things in the hands of people that are going to do unbelievable things here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, basically, you know, you're providing a law here that federal law will supersede your law. You will put that person in violation of their rights and liberties to own and possess that firearm. You know, and I can't see how this law can even come about if you can't get those people out of that pot store, you know, without them being criminally charged, the same way as they can walk out of a liquor store with a bottle of wine.
That is,
how are you going to do it?
Yeah, that's an interesting point that certainly I haven't thought of in terms of if you're a model citizen, you want to possess a firearm, and yet legalization of marijuana does occur, and you do go in. I guess you can't participate in the legalization effort. Hey, George.
But, you know, this is something these people should have picked up on, because I believe it was Mr. Amosoy did the civil unions aspect, in which a lot of people don't realize the legislative branch did not do this, the executive branch did not do this. This was deemed by the Supreme Court of Vermont that this would be done. And it's done under the pretext that you can't violate somebody's individual rights and liberties. So if you can't violate somebody's individual rights and liberties, how are you going to create a law that violates somebody's individual rights and liberties?
George, thank you for the phone call. I really appreciate it. We're asking the question today, what do you think should be the priority of this year's legislature? Is it the economy? Is it mandatory sick leave? Is it the budget? Is it the passage of a carbon tax? Or the legalization of marijuana, as we were just discussing? Is it reforming the social welfare system, or the education finance system, or the healthcare system? George brought this up. Should it be gun control as an objective? Is it opiates, which weaves through a lot of issues in Vermont in terms of the issue of crime? Is it something else? And as we started the program out, the economy, according to polls, is the number one issue in Vermont. But I'm interested in your opinion. Give us a call at our WDEV studios at 802-244-1777 or toll free at 877-291-8255. Let's go back to the phone lines and Mark in Williamstown. Mark, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Just in reference to your last caller, when he was talking about going into a gun store and signing a bunch of paperwork stating that he's not an illegal drug user, he's signing federal paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
When he walks into the pot store, the state has okayed it, but the federal government has. So when he's signing that federal paperwork and then walks into a pot store, he's setting himself up, not anybody else.
Yeah, that's what I had mentioned.
He's setting himself up.
Yeah, you would have to, if you were a pot user, you would have to stop using pot in order to purchase that firearm, unless I'm misconstruing what he was saying.
Well, that's my thought also. And, you know, if you're using pot, you shouldn't have a gun.
That makes that.
You know, I own several of them. Haven't smoked pot in 30 years. But the other thing is, as far as the economy goes,
mm-hmm.
how about getting some manufacturing business in the state? You know, we've lost manufacturing business since Madeleine Cunin was in office.
Yeah, it is one of the areas where we have lost. I mean, we have had job losses in manufacturing and the construction industries, and those haven't abated since the recession. And
Before the recession, you know, when 30 years ago, we lost Malden Mills when Madeleine Kinley was here. We lost CNS Foods because the state wouldn't allow them to put their own exit into their buildings and off the interstate. Instead of, you know, they just went across the border. There's if we get some manufacturing in this state that actually paid decent, I'm not talking about McDonald's or anything like that, but, you know, I think the state could step up and help out some manufacturing and get some good paying jobs in this state.
Hey, Mark, that's a great suggestion. Thank you for your phone call. That was Mark from Williamstown. And the question we're asking, what do you think should be the priority of this year's legislature? Would welcome your calls at our WDEV studios at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. We'll continue with this discussion in a moment. This is Open Mic. Welcome back to Open Mic. I'm Mike Smith. We're talking about what you think should be the priority of this year's legislature. We've had a variety of calls in a variety of areas. Is it the budget that is the main concern that you have? Is it the economy? Is it the passage of a carbon tax? Should we do it or shouldn't we do it? Is it legalizing marijuana? Should we do it or shouldn't we do it? Should a priority be reforming the education finance system, thereby reducing property taxes, or the health care reform system, or the social welfare system? Is a priority opiates, or is it gun control? Be interested in your phone calls. If you could call us at our WDEV studios at 802-244-1777 or toll-free at 877-291-8255. Let's go back to the phone lines, and let's go to Sam in Randolph Center. Sam, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning. I was calling. I was thinking that one of the top priorities that I think about for the legislature is dealing with the opiate crisis. The feeling, the sense that the legislature wants to legalize marijuana before they've dealt with the opiate crisis is like a kid who wants dessert before eating their vegetables, in my opinion. And the thought of decriminalizing property crimes relating to drug addiction. Our homes are being robbed in all these rural areas. And as I'm a farmer and a logger and a landowner, and the thought that, you know, the state has been holding people in my industry heavily accountable to society, and the thought of working the land and coming home and finding my home robbed, and that person's not going to be held accountable in some of these proposals, is shows a real lack of what the people out in the communities are seeing from the legislature, a lack of their ability to see down the road what kind of society they're creating.
You know, Sam, you raise a very good issue, which is nobody has made that nexus, and either you got to address that issue, or because that nexus between legalizing marijuana and the opiate, I think, is in the minds of most people. And if you want to legalize marijuana, I think you got to address that issue. You've got to tell Vermonters why this isn't an issue by legalizing marijuana actually causing more problems with the opiate issue than not. And I haven't heard politicians address that issue. Maybe I've heard some of the advocates address it, but I haven't heard politicians address that issue in terms of the nexus, Sam. And you raise a great point, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. I think it's really, the opiate crisis has really changed rural Vermont and rural New England in a significant way. And I don't feel like it's at all being adequately addressed.
Sam, thank you for the phone call. Let's go to Bill in Northfield. Bill, you're on open mic. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Great, thank you.
Everything that everybody's talking about is all very relevant, and I would submit to you that it's 90% of it is the legislature's fault, and starts with the budget. What they do is that they forecast that we're going to grow 5%, 4 to 5% every year, and they've been doing this for about 5 or 6 years now, and we never do that. In the past 4 or 5 years, it's about 2% every year. So they, at the end of the recession, they say they've got a balanced budget, but it's based on that forecast. And then we come in at 2%, and they decide, oops, on June 30th, we're fine. The 1st or 2nd of July, we're $17 million in a hole. And then what they try to do is balance it on either the back of state workers, I'm not a state worker, so I'm by either cutting their pay or laying them off or something like that. Now we've got this marijuana thing, which will bring us a lot of revenue, which will only cover up their inability to balance the budget and then stick to a forecast that is can be actually adhered to and that they can meet. But when they advert or when they forecast a greater percentage of what we're going to have come in, and it doesn't come in that way, which it won't, then they just throw up their hands and say, oh, my God, what are we going to do? And they put it on the backs of Vermonters.
That, Bill, you raise a very interesting question, because the spending trend, as you said, is around 5%. The revenue trend, the money coming into the state, is just under 3%. And when those two things happen, guess what? You got a problem. And that's what they have run into. And Bill, you put it in stark terms that you're gonna have this problem year after year after year if you don't match revenues with expenditures. including taking a rosy forecast instead of a conservative forecast on that. Bill, thank you for your call. Let's go to Fred in Newberry. Fred, you're on open mic.
Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
You know, easy money. That's what the damn people in Montpelier want. Easy money. That's what they think it is. So here's my suggestion. Marijuana be the first thing. And then we could have casino gambling. And then we could top it off with prostitution. How about that?
You're describing Vegas, aren't you?
I'm describing Montpelier and how crazy those people are. And, of course, that's my fault because, you know, I voted for the wrong people, maybe.
You know what's interesting? I don't believe, and the advocates will say this, Fred, they don't believe either, that revenue should be the driving force in terms of legalizing marijuana. They talk about the black market. I don't think we eliminate the black market by legalizing marijuana, but, you know, they talk about this. I don't think they're going to get the revenue that they think they're going to get out of this legalizing marijuana. If you look at Colorado, and you sort of extrapolate from what happened in Colorado, I think the revenues are going to be a lot less than what people are either reporting or saying in terms of the revenue. The other side of the revenue picture is that you have an expenditure side as well. You have to police this thing. You have to regulate this marijuana law. And that takes a lot of money. As Colorado found out, it takes tremendous amounts of money. And Fred, you're absolutely right on that. I mean, you know, if it's revenue that you're looking at, you're going to get revenue. But the point that you're making, I think, is that where does this stop? Is it revenue at all cost? And,
right.
And is
exactly
that right. Is that something that was your main point on that, right?
Yeah, right. Where does it stop? That's right. You know, legalize marijuana, and you could have casino gambling, you could have prostitution, and then from there, geez, how else can you go, huh?
Hey, Fred.
Legalize murder?
I don't think anybody's going to go there. Fred, thank you so much for your phone call. What we've been talking about today is, what do you think should be the priority of this year's legislature? And we've heard a lot about the economy. We've heard a lot about marijuana as well in terms of, you know, things that we should be looking at, both pro and against, in terms of how do we balance our budget. The budget has been a problem the last few years. We seem to have budget gaps. We seem to have budget deficits. And that is a problem. And I don't envy legislators in terms of what they have to do, because it's always difficult. If you look at the budget, you know, if you look at the billions in the budget, a lot of it can't be really touched, but a lot of it can be. So it is a daunting task, but we have to get it under control. We have to get our budget under control. We have to get our economy growing again, Betsy Bishop had talked about. It is important that we do it, and it's very important that we move forward. So we talked about the economy, and that is an issue, as I said before, that is first and foremost on people's mind, is the economy. It's borne out in polls, poll after poll, whether it's the Castleton poll or it's a national poll, in terms of what people are saying. And this shouldn't come as a shock to legislators. You know, we've talked about this. There's still an angst after the Great Recession of 2008. There's still an angst about world events, and particularly what we saw in the stock market yesterday. There's still an angst about job losses. And our economic data isn't all that great as well. If you compare the three-year period from 2011 to 2013 to that of 1988 and 1990, median household income is about the same as it was 20 years ago. And if you look at unemployment rate, you have low unemployment rate in some counties and high unemployment rate in others. So those are some of the issues that we talked about.